Independent wrestling is pretty damn fucking cool.
We're sitting down in the spotlight and squared circle with Rhino.
We're trying to bring more awareness to the independent professional wrestling scene.
Undoubtedly thankful for anybody that just decided to tune in and actually liked us enough to keep listening.
You're tuned into a show of such thermonuclear awesomeness, your head might just implode into another quantum universe. That's right, it's Grapple Talk, the universal cure for boredom. Featuring Nicholas Ragnar, A.C. Riley, and Jesse Von Ruden. Stick around, you don't know what is going to be coming out of their mouths.
Welcome into Grapple Talk. What an episode we have planned for today. We're talking to, you know, Hall of Fame inductees, man. It's going to be really, really cool. Lots of stuff to get to today, and you guys, I'm really looking forward to this one.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's one thing because we were talking about who we wanted to talk to for the spotlight. So we knew that this big event in Robbinsdale was happening this weekend, so we talked to the event coordinator, Carol, who will be on for this for the spotlight. But then she upped the ante and said, do you guys want to talk to Greg and Larry? And I remember I was just on the Facebook group and messaging you guys like, oh, do you guys want to interview Greg fucking Gagne and Larry fucking Henning? So, yeah, pretty exciting.
Yeah, it's actually going to be a lot of fun. If anyone has any type of knowledge about wrestling, especially in the Midwest, when you hear the last names Gagne and Henning, you know that's big fucking deal right there. I apologize for cussing right away.
We're excited.
Well, we're excited, but at the same time, though, this is an opportunity that we're never going to probably get again in our lives, is to talk to the two first inductees into the Minnesota Wrestling Hall of Fame, catch them just days before this great event on Sunday, and really get to learn about wrestling, not necessarily like how we see it, but how a previous generation sees it. And that's, guys, man, this is going to be exciting.
It's going to be fantastic, and, you know, we do have a lot to get to. We have three interviews scheduled for this show, so we're going to say it. Just hit up the Facebook page, facebook.com/thegrappletalk. Otherwise, grappletalkpodcast.weebly.com. We'll have all the upcoming show information. This is actually the first, believe it or not, the first Grapple Talk ever where we're not doing the roundtable preview shows.
That's true. We're not doing that. We're not doing
crazy.
The perspective. We're not doing... we're not doing a national topic, and there's a lot of stuff that we could have actually addressed, but it's just we want to focus, put the spotlight on the spotlight, I guess, in this case, and yeah.
So if you put a spotlight on spotlight, does that drown out the spotlight, or is that just room lighting?
I feel
it's
like now
spotlight.
I feel like now it's just one big room of light.
Yeah,
it's like a lit room.
It's like a lit room. It's not even just spotlight. At this
so
point.
Lit room in the squared circle.
Lit room in the squared circle.
How about just the squared circle lit up? It's lit up now. We're lighting up the entire squared circle.
That works.
That's happening. We're going to talk to Carol coming up next about the events coming up Sunday. You're not going to want to miss it. We're going to get the deeds, the dirty deeds. So stick around for that one. We got lots of Grapple Talk to get to. You're not going to want to miss it.
Hey, this is the real Brock Hall. You want to get your reality check? Check out Grapple Talk.
You're listening to Grapple Talk,
the hottest property in this industry today.
Keeping you up to date on Midwestern independent wrestling.
Do I have everybody's attention now?
It's Spotlight in the Squared Circle.
This week in the Spotlight in Squared Circle, part one of three for this special Kicking things off. We're talking with Carol Castle, who is the event coordinator for the event happening on Sunday. Carol, thank you for joining us this week.
You're quite welcome. Thank you for the invitation.
So, Carol, tell us a little bit about what's going on this Sunday and your involvement with the Hall of Fame.
Well, my involvement is I was finishing up my master's in sports management, and in my very last semester, Vern Gagne died. And going to the wake and going to the funeral, I realized there's no Hall of Fame in Minnesota for our Minnesota royalty. And for my project, I started recording some of the Robbinsdale wrestlers. And then I realized I have to start the Minnesota Wrestling Hall of Fame. So I've incorporated it. We are a legal nonprofit. I'm the executive director and founder. And we have a home at the Robbinsdale History Museum. They've been very warm and welcoming to us, and that's where we should be. It is the birthplace of wrestling in Minnesota. They're the first, Robbinsdale High School is the first high school to ever have a wrestling coach or a wrestling program. See, that's where everything started in the Midwest.
That's really cool.
What I think is really cool about this is that, you know, we went down to the Dan Gable Hall of Fame in Waterloo, Iowa. Like I said, that's in Iowa, but I mean, it was really cool Hall of Fame to go to. But I think it's great that now you're starting up this Hall of Fame here in Minnesota, which is a lot closer to our neck of the woods. But I think that's great now that there's going to be two Hall of Fames right here in the Midwest to really emphasize and honor those that have come before us.
I agree. And we're including amateur wrestling, professional wrestling. It's because of the work ethic and the life skills wrestlers learn to be a successful wrestler. It's very inclusive. We have a great program at the U of M. I've spoken with Jay Robinson, and he's looking forward to having the Hall of Fame here. I've talked to just about everybody involved with wrestling, and it's time. It was time a long time ago, but this Sunday we're opening, and it's our first inaugural event with Larry Henning and Vern Gagne, and Vern's son Greg will be there to accept the award.
Absolutely. It's going to be one to remember. And right now the headlines are literally about Greg and Larry coming down, but, you know, take us to, you know, behind the curtain. What kind of work, I guess, has gone into really setting up this Hall of Fame?
Good question. I left my full-time job to do this right. I have hired an attorney to do the articles incorporation. The work is the legal preparation. I wanted to do it right. We have our own website domain, MinnesotaWrestlingHallOfFame.com. We have our articles incorporation. I've gotten the board of directors together. We have started to have meetings as far as how to grow, but grow slowly and do it right. That's kind of like one of the building blocks. I worked with Raleigh at the museum on Saturdays to get a feel for the museum, and I went through every piece of paper they had that had anything to do with the high schools, wrestling, football, have a lot of pictures. And we want to do a digital display. We were not going to have a lot of room in the museum at first, and I want people to be able to see what I saw and put it together. Because there's so many wrestlers that have come out that made it to the pro ranks. And, you know, amateurs. And we're just going to start putting things together. You know, whether it's for amateur wrestling, the Olympic people, the Olympic wrestlers that have gone on, the professionals. We have Brock Lesnar, who does everything. We're very fortunate in Minnesota. So it's just a lot of research and seeing who should be honored. And we're starting to think of different events that we can start bringing people together.
It's definitely a great cause for one of the things that could really put someone on the right path in life. Where did your passion for wrestling come from? It wasn't one of those things where you just woke up overnight and you're like, you know what, man, I'm really passionate about wrestling.
That is a wonderful question. When I was about three, my Uncle Jim and my dad would bring me to wrestling. And when I was about four and a half, I was probably the youngest kid they ever have ulcers. And my ulcers were because of Pretty Boy Larry Henning and Handsome Harley Race. They were. They were. I was a little kid with ulcers for years. And it was because they did their job so well. And that's where the passion came from. And I knew I had to have a finisher, and my finisher was either the Ganya sleeper or the figure four. And before I was in kindergarten, I was working on my time. How fast can I put it up? And I had five younger brothers and sisters to work on. That's where it came from.
Right. Really, really, really quick before we go, because we have, you know, the two Hall of Fame inductees to get to, and that who knows how long that's going to take. Really quick, give us the specific details for this Sunday's event for anybody that wants to come on down.
Oh, well, thanks for the opportunity. The specific details are this noon, this Sunday at noon, we have Greg Bonney accepting the Hall of Fame award for his father. We have Larry Henning accepting his award as the first two inductees of the Minnesota Wrestling Hall of Fame. We're going to be housed at the Minnesota History or the Robbinsdale History Museum, 4915 42nd Avenue North in Robbinsdale. We also have Tim McNiff. He posts Carol Evan. He now has his own business, Media Minefield, who will be our keynote speaker. And we're just going to spend a couple hours hearing stories and honoring our legends.
Awesome. Well, this Sunday, Robbinsdale is going to be the place to be for the first ever induction of two Hall of Fame greats here in the Minnesota area. So, Carol, thank you very much for coming and talking to us about everything that's going on this Sunday.
Oh, thank you so much, and hope you both can make it.
Greg Gagne coming up next, guys. Stick around. You're not going to miss this one. It's Grapple Talk.
This is Stacy Shadows.
We've said it numerous times that Stacy Shadows is one bad bitch.
And you're listening to Grapple Talk, the best indie wrestling podcast right now known to man.
It's not about the shoes. It's about knowing where you're going. Not forgetting where you started. It's about having the courage to fail. Not breaking when you're broken. Taking everything you've been given and making something better. It's about work before glory. And what's inside of you is doing what they say you can't. It's not about the shoes. It's about what you do in them. It's about being who you were born to be.
Hello, fellow bar patrons. This is the Ring of Honor top prospect, the Beer City Bruiser, Matt Winchester.
And the Beer City Bruiser, no slouch. Many regional titles, came here with a reputation.
And you're listening to Grapple Talk.
And we delivered.
Well, guys, we got an opportunity here on the spotlight to actually sit down with an all-time great, and that is Greg Gagne, the son of Vern Gagne, who's actually getting inducted into the Minnesota Wrestling Hall of Fame on this Sunday. And Greg, how you doing?
Well, thank you very much for having me on. This is a big moment for not only our family but also for Robbinsdale. They've turned out a lot of great, not only amateur but also professional wrestlers out of that out of their system there, and it all goes back to the great coaching they have in their amateur ranks, and we're really excited about the whole event.
So, kind of take us through the motions, I guess. So, how did this kind of come about? Did somebody just kind of get a hold of you and tell you what was going on? I mean, how did you guys really find out about this?
Well, Carol called me one day, and she said that they were putting together this Hall of Fame, and last year Robbinsdale High School had their inaugural Hall of Fame for the athletes at Robbinsdale High School, and Vern was one of the first inductees into that. And then, Robbinsdale's always been a big contributor and a strong powerhouse in amateur wrestling, and not only for the young kids but also their high school ranks. And they decided they're going to start this Hall of Fame for amateur wrestling, and Vern and Larry Henning are the first two inductees, both of them Robbinsdale graduates. So it's it's neat that they're doing this, and I've always said I was never, unfortunately, an amateur wrestler. My background was wrestling on the carpet in the living room with my father. he always told me, he said, you know, growing up, you're going to have a tough time because kids are going to challenge you. So I got to teach you how to defend yourself and how to wrestle. So we'd be on that carpet day after day after day. And I did wrestle when I was about 11, 12 years old. I played hockey, I played basketball, and I wrestled in the winter. So I'd go from one to the other. And I know I had to get to a hockey game, and I had my first match, and I went in, and I pinned the guy in about 8 seconds because I knew I had to get to this hockey game. So he was really excited and kind of wanted me to go in that direction. But all my friends were playing basketball and football and baseball, so I got involved in that and had an opportunity to get a football scholarship to Minnesota or into Wyoming and some other schools. So that's the direction I stayed in.
Wrestling was never really your first love.
Well, it always was, you know. I mean, we wrestled, I mean, all the time. God almighty, he would take me down in the living room and move the furniture and have to get down. He'd teach me balance, teach me holds, counter holds. And it was very frustrating because then the last, you know, half hour, I'd have to wrestle with him. And it's like anything else. It's, you know, it's repetition over and over and over until it comes second nature to you. So he's trying to teach me how to make a switch, and he'd leave himself open. And by the time I'd think to go do it, then he would reverse it and put something else on me, had me all cranked up, and I'd get really frustrated. I did go out for a wrestling team at Mound High School my junior year. I was also playing basketball, and they had an open spot, so I went down. Lotto Macias was the coach. His brother was the coach at Mankato State. Great wrestling coaches, both of them. So I had to wrestle everybody on the team that day, and I pinned from the lightweight all the way up to the heavyweight. So he said, okay, you're on the team, and I weighed 162 pounds. And he said, we got a spot at 137 open for you. And I went, God, I'm thin now. How am I going to get down to 137? So I went down and went out and talked to my dad and went home. And he said, well, you know, good job, but, you know, you can't cut that much weight. And then an opportunity to get a football scholarship, you know, at 137 pounds, they're going to drop that pretty quick. So I didn't wrestle. And but after college, I had an opportunity to sign as a free agent with the Atlanta Falcons. And my dad said, well, you know, you got to get ready for camp. So I finished school and right after the season and came home. And he stuck me with a guy named Billy Robinson, an English wrestler, professional wrestler, who had a great amateur background. And he said, he's got a great workout routine. So to get yourself prepared for football in June, why don't you work out with Billy? I'll set it up. So I had a two-hour workout with him every day, and it was conditioning, it was wrestling, it was submission wrestling, and he was a great submission wrestler. And the same thing, I'm going through this routine with him, and you know, the last 20, he'd show me his holds, and then we'd wrestle and leave himself open, and I'd go to grab an arm, and all of a sudden my foot's up in my ear, and I'm screaming. So it was very, very frustrating. But as the longer I did it and the closer we got to the football camp, I said, you know, I went to my dad and I said, you know, I really like wrestling. I think I could be a pro. He said, what makes you think you can be a pro? And I said, well, I don't know. Maybe I can't then. I mean, if you don't think I can, but, you know, I'd like to give it a try. So he was sponsoring the 1972 Olympic team at the time. And he had all the Olympians up to the house. Dan Gable was there, and Chris Taylor, and one of the Smith brothers, and just, you know, a lot of great amateur wrestlers. I mean, they're all on the Olympic team. And I got talking with them, and the more I got around them, I said, Dad, I want to wrestle. Well, he was sponsoring a guy by the name of Ken Patera, who was on the Olympic team as a power lifter. He had set the world record for pressing 500 pounds over his head, and he was going to turn Ken pro when he got back after the Olympics. So I joined him, and I called my old partner in school, Jim Brunzel. I said, hey, what are you doing? He was playing semi-pro football. I said, how'd you like to wrestle? He said, well, shit, I don't know anything about wrestling. I said, well, you're a good athlete. You'd be like me. You'll catch on. So he came out to the camp, and then my dad had also signed a guy by the name of Khosrow Vasiri, better known as the pros as the Iron Sheik. He was about 180 pounds. He was an amateur wrestler and a bodyguard for the Shah of Iran. And then we had Bob Ruggers, who played football with Denver and also the San Diego Chargers, and Ric Flair, who was a friend of mine for a long time, and I knew he wanted to be a professional wrestler. So the six of us went to camp with about 100 other guys. And after the first day, there were six of us left. Most of them only lasted 20 to 30 minutes. We did 6 hours a day, 6 days a week, and it was some of the toughest stuff I've ever done in my life. But that all comes, again, from Vern's background and the coaching he got as an amateur at Robbinsdale, and just kind of passed it on to us, and the drills we had to do, and the holds and counter holds we had to learn to become really good professionals.
So would you say that a lot of your conditioning with the wrestling conditioning for football and your football experience, do you think that really helped a lot with your training as well?
Well, I think the wrestling did. I know when my first year I went to Minnesota, and I was Murray Wombat had three out-of-state quarterbacks on scholarship, so most of the Minnesota kids were walk-on except one, Jeff Wright, who came in as a running back. And we would scrimmage those kids every year or every week, and the scholarship against the Minnesota kids. And we were winning week after week. So I earned after the spring game being the number one quarterback. So then in the following fall, Murray Wormath, you know, his philosophy was all his best athletes on defense. So a lot of us got moved to defense. Jeff Wright was a safety. I was a cornerback. So I had to come up and break up the end runs. And again, when you go back to the training I had from my father on the wrestling really helped me, because I remember I got in a couple of, you know, in preseason, you always get in a couple of fights. and I was only about 175 pounds, and he was a defensive end. I had his name on the end of my tongue and I forgot it. He was about 6'5 and about 270, and he was drilling me pretty good. And he came off the line, and I hit him, and he came after me, and I just naturally grabbed him and took him down. And, of course, Murray is he's loving this. So then about 2 days later, we're in the lunch line, and John Wintermute and John Darkenwald jumped on me in the line, and I front face locked one of them and kept the other one at bay because I was cranking the other one's neck, and he was screaming. I'd just keep moving him around. And Murray loved that, so that's how I think I ended up on defense.
Whatever way you can get on defense.
Because wrestling taught you great balance and how to protect yourself. And really, you know, even when I went in as a professional, I went into some people that really were, they thought we were outmatched with, but because of the training that we had, Jim and I could handle about anybody. The only guy I was really concerned about when I got in the ring was the first time I wrestled Mad Dog Vachon. I don't know if you remember him or not, but he was the most unpredictable man in professional wrestling, and I'd see my dad come home from matches with bites and scratches on him, and I said to my dad, what do I do with this guy? He said, hit him twice as hard as he hits you. I said, that's it? He said, that's it, and good luck. So I went out there. I had about 20 minutes with him. And, I went to tie up with him at the beginning of the match, and he caught me with an open hand, and his hands were like cement. Mm-hmm. You feel it right down in your feet. So I caught him back, and about the third time, I caught him right over the ear, and he lost his equilibrium. So I grabbed a leg and took him down, and I took a deep breath, and as I did, he peeled all the skin off my back with all 10 fingers running down my back. So I got in the locker room after the match, and I'm bleeding and cut up, and I said to Jim, God almighty, I hope I never have to get in the ring with him again. He kicks open the door, the locker room door, and here he comes, and I kind of grabbed a chair, and I'm looking at him, and he looks at me, and he goes, I respect you. And then he turned and walked away. I almost passed out. But again, when I go back to that, Mad Dog Vachon was an amateur wrestler way back. Mm-hmm. My dad met him in 1948 on the U.S. Olympic team against the Canadian wrestling team. And Mad Dog was on the Canadian team. That amateur background that those guys had made them, you know, the best professionals when they came in. So, we're anxious and looking forward to this big event coming up Sunday at noon with the Robbinsdale Historical Society, and they're going to induct both Larry Henning and Vern Gagne into the first Amateur Hall of Fame in Robbinsdale. And we were very proud of my father and all of his accomplishments that he had over the years, and I'm really looking forward to this big event on Sunday.
Yeah, it's going to be a one to remember. And I got to know, you know, coming from, you know, as a Ganya, you know, what's that kind of like, I guess, when you were in the AWA working under your father? I mean, what kind of influence did that have on you inside the ring?
It didn't have any influence on me. It was, you know, I was scared. Well, you know, because I never wanted to, you know, everybody says you want to follow in your father's footsteps. Well, no, I want to be a wrestler. I want to become my own identity in the ring and do my own thing. And I knew, and my father knew, that a lot of these guys over the years that he wrestled are going to really, you know, take some shots and try to take advantage of me. And that's why he stuck me with Billy Robinson for 6-7 months. I mean, when we came out of that camp, even though we were green and maybe inexperienced, we were in such tremendous shape that I wasn't afraid to get in the ring with anybody. And it all comes back down to the training we got from both Vern and Billy Robinson.
On a personal level, what does Sunday mean to you to have the opportunity to actually induct your father into the Wrestling Hall of Fame there in Robinson?
Well, you know, it's hard to explain what it really means to everybody in the family. Mm-hmm. And to me, I mean, when I grew up, you know, in the 50s, and my idols in professional sports were Mickey Mantle, Bart Starr, and Vern Gagne. And I always tell the story, you know, and my dad became good friends with a lot of the New York Yankees. He wrestled in New York a lot, and he went to a game in Washington to see the old Washington Senators were playing the Yankees, and he would go out with Mantle and Whitey Ford and a few other guys after the game. They invited him to sit on the bench, and he came home and told a story. He said, "Yeah, I'm sitting on the bench with him." And old Casey Stengel, the manager, he's sitting down in the dugout. He slept through 7 innings. Then he woke up and changed pitchers. He said, so anyhow, when the Senators became the Minnesota Twins, the Yankees came to town, and he brought me to the Yankee game, and I was going to get an opportunity to meet all the New York Yankees. And I mean, I'm just, you know, in heaven. And of course, I'm going to meet Mickey Mantle. So we get in the locker room after the game, and I see Mickey Mantle, Elston Howard, Bill Skowron, Tony Kubek, Bobby Richardson, Whitey Ford. They all come running over to meet my dad. And that's when the light went on. I mean, my God, you know, my father is their idol. I mean, it was, you know, quite a feeling, you know, that here I am growing up, and this man is my father, and all these people that look up to him. And when he passed away here recently, there was coverage. New York Times wrote a big article on him, from New York to California, everything in between, every state. And I was getting calls from all over, and overseas, Japan, England, France, big articles about Vern Gagne. I mean, he was the first professional wrestler that became more than just a wrestler. He became a star. He was on the network TV when it came out in 1950. And he was an idol to a lot of people and a lot of athletes around the world, and I didn't realize it until I, you know, started getting on the road and meeting all these other ball players in all sports, and hockey and football and baseball. That's all they wanted to talk about was Vern Gagne. So, you know, it means quite a bit. And those are things that you don't, growing up around him, you don't realize what he meant to a lot of other people.
Well, certainly the Gagne name means a lot in the wrestling business. And, you know, you certainly come from a very prestigious legacy, Greg. So in addition to that as well, is that we've actually met some of the guys that you've had a hand in training, such as guys like Little Tiger, Eric Lockhart, Paul Bruschi. So what does that mean to not only have that legacy, but also to pass along that wisdom to the newer generation?
Well, it means a lot. And, you know, you throw out those names, but Vern trained 144 professional wrestlers. 98% of them all were main event people. I've tried to pass that on. I worked for Turner Broadcasting when I had to retire from wrestling, and they had me train wrestlers. Here's some of the people that I was in the ring with. They had been trained but weren't finished off. and he had a lot of work to do. Kevin Nash, Triple H, Steve Austin, Booker T, Dallas Diamond Page, that I worked for Turner Broadcasting. I mean, for WWE hired me a few years ago, about 4 years ago. Usually out of their camps in 6 months, they get one or two people. I had 17 people ready for them in a matter of 6 months. So it feels pretty good. But all I've done was taken what I learned from Vern and how he trained people and do the same routine with the kids that I try to train.
Speaking of working for
some pretty good names there, aren't there?
Oh, yeah, there's definitely some good names there. Speaking of working for WWE, as more or less a, would you kind of say as a road agent, I guess, in the mid-2000s?
No, I was hired actually to help with their TV programming, and I was up there for 6 months, and I just didn't like it. I didn't like the direction they were going. And then I was sitting watching a match with Shawn Michaels one night, I was the one that found Shawn Michaels and put him and Jannetty together, found Shawn on a tape and brought him to the AWA. And he was having, it was an old style wrestling match with somebody. And Vince said, God damn it, why can't my guys do that? I said, well, nobody's training him that way. He turned to me and said, can you do it? I said, yeah, I can do it. So they sent me down. I would get up at 4 o'clock on Friday or on Sunday morning, Monday mornings, fly to Louisville, get in there at 10, get to the arena at 10:30. Training started at 10, so I was always a half hour late. I'd be in the ring with the kids from 10:30. We had four different groups. I'd be there till 8 o'clock at night, both Monday and then Tuesday. I had to write a TV show for them, for the young kids. And then we were there at 9 in the morning till midnight. And then I'd get up at 5:30 the next morning, fly to Atlanta, drive 50 miles to a camp there, get in the ring, had to write a TV show for them that day, and then do 2 days of training with the kids. So I did that for 6 months, and then got 17 kids ready, and then I was supposed to get renew my contract with a raise, and Stephanie McMahon called me and told me that I was teaching the kids to dropkick the wrong way. And I said, Stephanie, I made my living dropkicking. Obviously, you don't want to pay me. So, and I'm tired of being on the road, so you go your way and I'll go mine. So that was my stint with the WWE.
Well, I know we got to wrap things up here, but I got a quick question. When
you do? Yeah, all right. I hope I got a quick answer for it.
I might go on and on here. Yeah, all right. So when the WWE actually bought out the film rights for, like, the AWA library and stuff like that, when they decided to launch the network, we noticed, actually, there wasn't a lot of AWA content on there besides, you know, like, the DVD they produced. Do you know when that AWA content's going to be out there, or is it just going to be something you're going to hold on to for a while?
Well, here's what happened with that. We actually started Stan Hubbard from KSTP, the owners of KSTP, mm-hmm. is a good friend of my brother-in-law, Bob Graziger. And they were, Stan, his father, had put the first satellite up for, and was DirecTV. Or actually, DirecTV bought him out. And he said, before, when they bought him out, why don't we do a pay-per-view with some of the old wrestling tapes, some of the old cards? So we put together a big pay-per-view. They promoted across their network, and they did unbelievable numbers with it. So once they sold it, Stan hooked my brother-in-law up and Todd Okerlund with the gal at DirecTV, and then we produced a pay-per-view for him every month. And we did that for 2.5 years. McMahon was on there, and he was trying to negotiate a better contract, and they told him that they didn't need him. They had wrestling, and that's why he came to us to buy us out, to buy all our footage. Turner had about 2.5 times more hours than we did, but they paid us more money. The AWA was their area, what they called their territories, was from like Winnipeg to St. Louis to the West Coast. We had the biggest, grossed the most, more money than the WWF at that time, which was on the East Coast. And the talent liked wrestling here, the big names, because they always had the month of May and first 2 weeks of June off. They weren't, you know, they weren't banging the roads like they were in North Carolina and Florida and Dallas and New York, where it's 365 days a year. I mean, your body just can't take that. So all the best talent usually came to the AWA, and they had some great, great names there and some of the greatest talent in all the world. There's your short answer.
Well, I guess we could ask.
You're still there? Did you doze off?
No, we didn't doze off. And we actually have. I have one more quick question as well. Just in your opinion.
Well, one more quick one.
One more quick one. This might be a little longer. With your experience, with everything that you've done, I just have to know, in your opinion, the state of wrestling today. I mean, what is your opinion of how professional wrestling is right now?
Well, it's different, and I mean, you know, from 1950 when Vern started on network TV, it evolved. From into the 60s, into the 70s, the 80s, and now to me, though, it's when we wrestled, we were taught we had to compete and you had to be able to wrestle in the ring. And a short match for us was maybe 15 minutes, unless you got lucky and caught somebody quick. But most of the time, we were wrestling anywhere from 25 to 55 minutes in the ring. And that's why the training was so, you know, the endurance we had to have the endurance to be able to go an hour in the ring, and that takes a lot of hard training. Today's wrestling, to me, and when I found out with the McMahons, when you're in with TV people, the attention span of the general public is 8 seconds. That's why newscasts, they jump from one, you know, talk about some guy just got shot and killed, and the next minute they're talking about, you know, something going on in the Twin Cities. They're building a new building. I mean, there's no remorse or anything from the guy getting killed to going to the new stadium being built, you know, because the attention span of the public, like they say, is 8 seconds. So to me, watching wrestling today is watching a video game. I guess that's the best way and the only way I know how to describe what they're doing in the ring. They're good athletes, they're big bodies, they're strong, phenomenal endurance, but it's just, they just want action, you know? So it's a whole different style. I mean, when I went down to Turner and got in the rings with the guys, there wasn't a kid there that could handle me, from Sting to Austin to all of them. I mean, they, you know, everything, I was trained the right way. Today's kids, you know, it's a whole different ballgame. And that's the best thing I can say. It's a video game. You're watching a video game. Personalities, they build all these characters. When we wrestled, the characters you saw, that's the way they really were, in and out of the ring. And today, the kids are more interested in creating a personality like you do on a TV show or on a movie set, you know, become this character. When I was down there, this one kid in Louisville, he'd been there 2 years, and he just wasn't getting it. So I took him, and in 6 weeks, he really turned around. So I'm back in the offices and with these TV people, and one of these guys says, "We need a pirate." And I said, "You need a what? A freaking pirate?" "Well, for marketing, we need a pirate." So then they start looking at the kids in camp because they film them all the time. "Here, this guy." And I said, "Hey, he can't be a pirate. He can't. That's not him. He's not a pirate." Well, they brought him up. They dressed him up, put a patch on him. They had him come swinging in on a rope into the ring. First time he swung right into the side of the ring and went down. So he's there for about 3 weeks. And the TV people say, "Fire him. He's horrible." And I said, "Now, wait a minute, you guys. You've never done, this kid has been training for 2 years. You don't know what it's like. This is his life. He wants to be a professional wrestler. He's not trained right because he can't be a pirate. You're going to let him go?" I said, "That makes no sense to me." I said, "You guys don't know what you're doing." And of course, Vince got a little mad at me, but, you know, they didn't. You know, so that's the mentality. They have people that write the TV show for them, and they write the characters. They write their interviews for them. We did it. I mean, we talked from the heart. We talked what we were hopefully going to achieve in the ring against our opponent. But no different than when you ask Lynn Makings how they're going to handle Green Bay.
Poorly.
You know? Yeah, now it's, you know, everybody's screaming, "I'm going to tear this freaking guy's head off. I want to do that." You know, I mean, you know, the physicality is still there in wrestling. I mean, all these guys are getting hurt all the time. But it's more of gymnastics in a video game than it is a wrestling match. Definitely. How high can you jump? How many flips can you do? You never see a wrestling hold, very seldom. You know, that's why when I went down to Turner and I put a hold on these guys, they didn't know how to get out of them. I said, you got to be kidding me. What makes you think you can wrestle? You got to learn how to wrestle. You have to have a background in wrestling. You have to be able to put a hold on and get out of a hold. God almighty. If you'd have been with the old timers, man, they'd have put you in one, you'd be down there the rest of your life. You'd never get up. So anyhow, I mean, that's my thought on it. He put everybody out of business, McMahon did, so he's got the only show in town. There's no competition. The only competition is the UFC, and that is really physical, and, you know, it's almost too much. I'm surprised somebody hasn't got killed in there already. But I think there's a brand out there right now. If you had the money to compete, you could create some new talent that is a little old school and a little better than new, put together and get the kids competing again. That would probably, it'd take you a year to get it established. If the TV would give you that allowance, you'd have a chance to go up against McMahon, but otherwise nobody can. They're just too big. They're global, and, you know, they market themselves well, and the kids today, that's what they grew up to. They haven't seen anything. They haven't seen the old school wrestling. Does that help? Was that a short answer?
It was a great answer.
Did you guys fall asleep again?
No, no, I'm pondering life. I don't even.
You're
still there?
No, we're just like a sponge over here in the studio. So Greg, with Sunday coming up, just last opinions about everything building up for Sunday.
Oh man, I'm looking forward to it. I hope a lot of people show up. You know, amateur wrestling is the hardest of any sport to compete in. You know, you're down on the mat. It's one-on-one. You've got your nose in somebody's armpit, and you can't get out. It's very demanding. The kids that do it are exceptional. It's the hardest thing of all the sports I competed in, the hardest thing to do and accomplish, and the kids that come out of it are great. And amateur wrestling needs a big push, and getting this Hall of Fame is the way to do it with two greats, Vern Gagne and Larry Hennings, so both from Robbinsdale. We're really looking forward to it and looking for a big turnout.
Oh, absolutely.
And then if I don't forget my old wrestling, that's noon on Sunday at the Robbinsdale Historical Building, right? Am I right?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Get there. Yeah. Like, you guys don't know what Marty O'Neill would say, fans, there's still tickets available, run, don't walk. Get down to Robbinsdale for the big event.
Well said, Greg. Thank you for Nick, Jesse, and myself for joining us this week in the spotlight.
Okay, and I hope Jesse's still awake.
Oh, I'm still awake.
Oh, you are? All right.
Yep, still here.
Anytime, guys, if you need anything else, let me know.
Well, that was Greg Grania this week in the spotlight. We'll be right back with Larry Hennig right here for more Gravel Talk.
Hey, everybody. It's me, Darren Corbin.
I've always gotten the question, why do I not do my own podcast? Well, I've branched out and I've tried to do Wrestling Reflections and the Wrestlers Reviewing Movie Letter, plus my promos that I flood your feed with all the time. And the number one reason is, when it comes to podcasts, everyone can always find a way to hear myself talk, and there's numerous podcasts out there, but I want to give my endorsement to one very special one. And that'd be Grapple Talk, that covers a lot of the Midwest independent wrestling highlights. See, a lot of the local Midwest wrestlers are the spotlight of the Squared Circle hosts. And that would be Nick Ragnar, Jesse Von Ruden, and AC Riley. And every week on iTunes or Podbean, you can catch their podcast. So I just want to give them a shout out. So if you're asking me why I don't do podcasts and you're maybe looking for my opinion, check them out for all your podcast needs and take a look and keep supporting independent wrestling in the Midwest.
Hey, Grapple Talk listeners, this is Chris from Spot Monkey Media. I'd like to speak about something that's near and dear to my heart. Elijah Mainville is a 7-year-old boy with cancer. You may know him as WWE superstar Drax Shadow. His video has been circulating around social media and wrestling websites. There's now a way you can support Drax Shadow and Elijah's family by buying the official Drax Shadow t-shirt, available now on booster.com. The fundraiser was created by Elijah's mother, Melody. All profits go straight to the Mainville family. Go to booster.com slash Drax underscore Shadow, or just check out Grapple Talk's Facebook page or Twitter for more information on that. Booster.com/Drax_Shadow. Let's make sure they meet their goal.
Hello, wrestling fans. Colt Cabana coming to you live from the 1 Hour Tees Arena in beautiful Chicago, Illinois. The pro wrestling action has been great so far. As you can see, Joey really dominating the ring so far. There's a beautiful belly-to-back suplex. And looks like Joey's shirt has been ripped.
What's up with that? You ripped my shirt.
Let's go check an instant replay, see exactly what happened. There you can see Joey's shirt ripped from the collar, and that's not good when you're trying to wear your pro wrestling t-shirt.
Man, you ripped my shirt. It's my only shirt. Joey.
Hey, looks like Ryan from 1 Hour Tees just threw Joey Ryan a brand new t-shirt.
Thanks, Pro Wrestling Tees.
ProWrestlingTees.com, over 3,000 wrestling t-shirts designed and sold by pro wrestlers. Wrestlers such as Steve Austin, CM Punk, Macho Man, Mick Foley, DDP, Andre the Giant, Jake the Snake, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Scott Hall, Ted DiBiase, Colt Cabana, Joey Ryan, Cliff Compton, and the entire Bullet Club. All stores owned by pro wrestlers. Support pro wrestling today and visit ProWrestlingTees.com.
This is the Monster of the Midwest, Sadus. There's a couple of things I really, really like. I like to hurt people, and I like grapple talk. So I'm going to keep listening.
You asked, and we delivered.
Welcome back to Grapple Talk. Awesome interview with Greg Gagne. But now we're moving on to the next legend, a man that will be inducted in the Hall of Fame on Sunday. We're sitting down with Larry the Axe Hennig. And Larry, how's it going today?
Well, thank you for having me.
So, Larry, this is an awesome opportunity because it's something that not only did the governor announce this wrestling appreciation in Minnesota, but now there's this Hall of Fame week, and it's all building up to this event here on Sunday. So what does that mean as already an established wrestling legend and having somebody like Carroll introduce this Hall of Fame right in your backyard, essentially?
Well, it's exciting. You know, wrestling is so big around the world, and I've been in it a long, long time. And it's very nice for someone to consider me for one of these Hall of Fame things. And our family and everybody is very proud and very happy about it.
So kind of talking about leading up to Sunday, I just have to know, you know, being a wrestling legend in the business today, you know, what does this Sunday mean to you? I mean, it's more of an amateur type of, an award or an induction. Take us back and, you know, and talk just about the days of amateur wrestling before you got started in the pro business.
Well, there's a big jump. Amateur, you do it for nothing, and professionally, you get paid. So the bottom line is...
Very simple.
Very simple, yes, it is. And as you know, I was when I was a sophomore in high school. I never was out for wrestling before. And I took third in the state my sophomore year.
I was out for wrestling before. That's nuts.
Yeah, well, that's when they only had they didn't have all these divisions and stuff. You know, it was just one-on-one against the state. Then, of course, I was an all-state football player, and my senior year I was a state champion. And I had a scholarship to Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Iowa, and I decided to go to Minnesota. But things didn't work out. I had a good scholarship there, but we got married, my wife and I, and we had a child. So I had to figure out a way to make a living. And so I decided, with my background in Vern Gagne and another fellow promoting Joe Pazendak, we decided that that's what I wanted to do, and that's how I got interested in it. It was strictly monetary things, but I love to wrestle anywhere. Anyway, so it has taken me to a lot of places around the world. And it's made a good living for my wife and my family. And during those years also, I stayed in the real estate business and auction business, which I'm still in today. And so the whole picture has been very good for us. We've been very lucky, but also we've worked very hard.
So early on in your career, you actually crossed paths with Harley Race, somebody we actually know very well, also in the Midwest. And you guys really made a name for yourself. But tell us a little bit about that pairing and how that really, you know, started off you in pro wrestling.
Are you talking about the Axe, or what are you talking about here? Pretty Boy?
Yep, pretty boy.
Okay. Well, first of all, I am pretty. And so that wasn't hard. That wasn't very hard to figure that one out. But I'd gone to New York, and I was wrestling in Madison Square Garden. And I hit a guy. And I used my elbows a lot wrestling. And the announcer said, well, it looks like he got hit with an axe. And from that day forward, I guess it was on national television. So from that day forward, I kind of got hung up with the name, and I liked it, and it worked. And it took me around the world, like I said earlier.
So talking a little bit about Madison Square Garden just for a second, because, I mean, you hear that a lot with wrestling, that if you can make it in Madison Square Garden, you can make it just about anywhere in wrestling. So what is that like to have that pressure to wrestle in the Square Garden? And just what was
I'll tell you a story about Madison Square Garden. When I wrestled there, my wife went out with me. First time I wrestled in Madison Square Garden. And there was some elderly lady at ringside. She got up and stabbed me in my calf of my leg with a pen. And my wife was sitting at ringside. She never moved. She was scared to death. So I just pulled out the pen and just kept going. But, you know, it was a thrill. I hadn't been to New York before I wrestled. So it was exciting, and it was very interesting. It's another whole way of life, but we enjoyed it. We've seen a lot of shows out there, and it was very nice.
Well, the Henny Names definitely has a prestige about it in professional wrestling. You actually got the opportunity to tag team with your son to go against the Ganyas in the early 80s there in the AWA. Like, how special was that for you?
Well, anytime you get a chance to wrestle with your son or any families that stick together, and it worked out very good. We had... we didn't have the same skills. He was very quick and exciting, and I was more of a surface transportation. I was bigger and stronger, so the combination worked very good. In fact, we wrestled the Road Warriors, I'm sure you're familiar with, in Boston Garden, and we got introduced there, and I went over to him, and I said, you guys got a big problem here. I said, you can't catch Kurt, and you can't beat me. So this is going to be an exciting match for you guys. But anyway, we end up winning, as a matter of fact. And that was exciting.
Speaking about the excitement, you know, what's that like being the head of that three generations of wrestlers? I mean, you know, you had Kurt. I mean, your grandson's right now in the business. I mean, how exciting is that just to know that bloodline has continued on through, you know, you kind of starting that legacy?
Well, it's exciting. We do have the three generation, Chris, Axel, of course, Kurt, and myself. So we all liked wrestling. We enjoyed wrestling. We're good at it. It's in our blood. It's in our veins. It's in our head. And talking about Kurt right now, Mr. Perfect, he was Mr. Perfect. He had it all. He had the biggest package. He was the most natural athlete in the world at one time. He could do anything. Wade Boggs, who is in the Hall of Fame, he's a catcher for the New York Yankees. Yep. Him and Kurt became very good friends, and he was doing these vignettes where you would bowl and throw darts and footballs or anything. So they thought, well, here's what we're going to do. They had a day when they went into the New York and into the ball field there. And Boggs went with them, and they wanted to get a picture of the ball going over the fence. So they brought Boggs there to hit the ball, and then they'd hand the bat to Kurt, and then they, you know, like Kurt knocked it over the fence, you know. are you following me? Well, anyway, Kurt took eight pitches and knocked four of them over the wall. Wow. And Wade Boggs said, "You are perfect. That's absolutely perfect." And he couldn't believe it, and they become very friends. Very good friends. We traveled the world together, hunted together, fished together, did a lot of things together since then. In fact, when Kurt was inducted into the Hall of Fame in New York, Wade Boggs is one of the guys that did the introduction to eulogy for him.
So when you were wrestling, when you started wrestling yourself, before Kurt was even in the wrestling business, before even Curtis obviously was in the wrestling business, did you think that was something that your legacy would carry on? Did you see yourself as having, you know, when you were having a kid, that, oh, this person will follow my footsteps? Or did you think they were going to pursue something different?
No, if I understand the question, I was excited about it from day one. And it came so natural for him. We're talking about Kurt now, right?
Yeah.
And his son, Joe, it's something in our genes, I guess. We like to wrestle. So I wasn't surprised that Kurt did that well, and I'm not surprised that Joe did that well, because they like it and they work hard at it. Matter of fact, Kurt and Joe still today, they'll come off the road, and on the way home, they'll stop at the gym and work out. You know, dedication. You got to watch your weight, and you got to watch your diet. You know, you got to watch you do a lot of weights and a lot of running, and so you got to have the whole package if you're going to make it. It's not a short-term deal. And living on the road, every hotel every different night, a different place to eat every night. You go to the arena and you come back and you get on an airplane, go through the security, and go and start all over the next day. So it isn't just what you see on television. Before that, he wrestled in Russia. Next match was in England. And the next match was in San Diego. So they're constantly in the air, because as a promoter now, the wrestling, they have their own network, and it's all over the world. And so what you see here is seen in every country. And when you go to those countries, it's unbelievable. They sell out all over the world.
That's definitely a really cool thing. You never really think of, like, how global wrestling has become, especially in the last 60 years. Definitely, you know, it's been a very serious interview, but I got to ask you, what's your favorite Kurt Hennig rib that he pulled on someone?
What's my favorite Kurt Hennig what?
Kind of like his practical joke. What was your favorite practical joke that Kurt would do?
Practical joke?
Yep.
Well, they were at a promoter's house, and the bathroom downstairs was full, so he went upstairs. And they had one of them little potties for their kids. Are you with me?
Yep.
Yeah. Well, he took a dump in there, and then just left it. And so the dad came home and called his wife. He said, "What's going on with our kid?" He said he went crazy. So that's pretty funny.
That's a good one.
Wow. Now, has practical jokes like that, has that continued along the Hennig family, or was that something that it was just strictly Kurt and nobody even dared to top?
Talk about what?
Some of the practical jokes that Kurt did, is that something that has continued with the Hennig legacy, or is that something that's essentially started and ended
so
with Kurt?
So does Joe pull jokes?
Does Joe pull jokes now?
Yeah, Kurt was probably the leader in that department. He did a lot of things, and I can't remember them all now, but he was pretty well noted for that, you know, and he did a lot of stuff, and he was very humorous. He was always smiling. He was happy to be where he was, and he raised a nice family, you know, and all the kids are doing really well. And of course, you know, Joe has just signed another 4-year contract with WWE. One of his sisters worked her way on her own through, became a registered nurse. The other girl got into wrestling there, worked out at Harley's camp, but she now has a child, so that took care of that. And Hank, the young one, is staying with Joel. He's all like a father to him. And he's got a job, and he's working his way through college. So all the kids worked out really well and doing very good.
So I got to ask you, Larry, I mean, when you look back on just the historic career that you had, I mean, is there a specific moment, a memory that really stands out compared to anything else?
Well, you mean in the ring or
yeah.
or anything in life?
I guess if you want to do both, that's totally fine. You can answer both.
Yeah. Well, I have so many memories. The biggest thing right now, I think we have 20, between great and grandchildren, we have 25 of those. And my problem now is I'm getting, in 4 months I'll be 80. So I can't remember the kids' names. They give them all goofy names now. And so I'm going to put numbers on them. And, yeah. So I tried it out when we had a few of them over here. I asked number 17 to give me a beer, and he says, I'm busy right now, I asked 12. So that's how that goes.
So they even go with the numbers game at this point.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it's one thing with you labeling the grandkids with different numbers, which is hilarious in its own right, but I think it's fantastic that your grandkids actually follow along with that as well, where they're numbering each other almost at this point. That's awesome.
Yeah, they get along. We have some great athletes coming up. My granddaughter is sitting here now with her friend, and she come up to visit us. She's got a scholarship. She's going to Stout in Wisconsin, and she's over 6 feet tall and one of the star volleyball players in the high school era. And she's also an artist. She's got a piece of her work is in San Diego and in the Art Institute out there. She's very creative. In fact, she designed some tights and T-shirts for Kurt, rather for Joe, in the WWE, and he wore them, you know, he wears them wrestling. So she's very talented. She's always been very talented. So, and the rest of them are doing, we've got good jobs. We're drug-free, smoke-free people, and they're all healthy, and they all got their own personalities, and they're all doing real good.
Well, that's great to hear, and congratulations to all of them. One thing that we asked Greg about this, Larry, that I want to ask you as well, is that as a wrestling legend, what do you think of the current state of wrestling in today's world?
Well, it's not as much wrestling as it used to be. It's turned more to entertainment, but the matter of fact is that you have to be a great athlete, and you got to be able to wrestle. And when I'm also in the Hall of Fame in Waterloo, Iowa, and they have a lot of amateur wrestling in Iowa. But the problem is when you get through with your amateur career, especially heavyweights, you got to have nowhere to go. You can't, you know, like a golfer or a baseball player or whatever. So they have to turn that something sometime along the line, like I did, you have to figure out how you're going to make some money. So they go into professional wrestling. And unfortunately, it's not like it used to be. There used to be territories. Now, one guy does it all, Vince McMahon. And you got to look at it this way, as a Ferris wheel. And he not only owns the Ferris wheel, he owns all the seats on the Ferris wheel. So if you're gonna work for him, first of all, you got to qualify to get on that Ferris wheel. But once you get there and sign a contract, the money starts rolling in. Joe has done very, very, very well, and he hasn't even peaked yet. You know, they're still waiting for his wave to come in there. But during the time, the downtime when he's not in the main event, he is making big money. And that's the bottom line. He's got three kids. Two boys, and he named the last one Hoss, like Horse Hoss Cartwright. Remember him?
Yeah.
I mean, that was before your time. Well, anyway, I just talked to Joe. He caught the night flight out of L.A. or someplace and got in late. So it's that way. He gets to spend 2-3 days a week at home, but those become short by the time you get back to the airport and get on the airplane again. But you know, everybody's got to be someplace, and if you're making good money and you enjoy what you're doing and you're taking good care of your family, that's very important.
Well, recently the wrestling community lost one of the other greats in Roddy Piper, and you actually had the privilege of being Piper's first opponent in his professional match.
I got to tell you a funny story about that.
All right, go for it.
Roddy Piper had his first match, but he just passed away, you know that, in Winnipeg, and I beat him in 27 seconds. So in his book, he put that in his book, and I was doing at one of these banquets, and I talked about Roddy Piper in that match, and he put it in his book. I said it was 27 seconds, but it would have been shorter, but I had to stop and tie my shoelaces. They had to take it down to about 8 seconds. Yeah, I said he didn't tell you about that.
Well, Larry, as we wrap things up, one last look coming up to Sunday. Obviously, really memorable. I mean, any last opinions you can share with us just about the chance that you have, I guess, to be inducted into this Hall of Fame? Actually, in your high school. Your former high school.
Okay. I'm glad you brought that up. There's a gal named Carol that's put in this Rome Health. I guess I have trouble with her name. But, we got the proclamation from the governor for the month and also for the week of the induction into the Wrestling Hall of Fame. And the governor signed the proclamation.
It's a tough word, yeah.
Well, there's more than five letters. I have trouble with it. So, anyway. But it's going to be Sunday, August 16th at noon, and it's in Robbinsdale where I went to school. And my dad was a car dealer, a car agency in Robbinsdale. I went to Catholic school there, and from there I went to Robbinsdale High School. And it's a thrill for me to go back there. It's a thrill for me to be inducted, be the first inductee, along with Vern, but Vern has passed on, so I'm probably the only one, live one, going to be there. That's still going to be, there'll only be one Hall of Fame guy in Minnesota for till next year anyway, and that'll be me. And I'm excited about it. And we're going to try to get most of the family there, so it'll be exciting.
Well, definitely looking forward to it. This Sunday, Robbinsdale, Minnesota, it's the place to be at noon, if I'm not mistaken. Right, Larry?
At noon, yeah. That's August 16th at Robbinsdale. And I got this 4915 42nd Avenue North in Robbinsdale, but it's between the railroad tracks and the high school. So that could be hard to find.
Definitely not. And check it out and remember that. This Sunday, Robbinsdale, Minnesota, the place to be. And Larry, for Jesse, Nick, and myself, thank you for joining us this week.
Thank you very much.
Larry Henney in the spotlight. We'll be right back with more Grapple Talk right after this.
Talk about your Psalms. Talk about John 3:16. Austin 3:16 says...
Stop watching your neighbors get undressed. You're listening to Grapple Talk.
Come on, that's not necessary.
All he's got to do is...
Download the latest Grapple Talk podcast on iTunes. Just type Grapple Talk into the search bar. It's not rocket science.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
Ryan Yanishadis here from the Ringside Report to remind you to watch the Ringside Report every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 6 p.m. on YouTube. Brandon McGrath and I discuss WWE, TNA, and the local independent scene. Go to youtube.com/RB Enterprises. That is the Ringside Report, your front row seat to all things wrestling.
For the latest pro wrestling news, keep it locked to www.gerweck.net. Gerwick.net. Pro wrestling since 1997.
Hi, this is the Minnesota Madman, Doug Meyer, host of the wrestling podcast on the DVM Podcast Empire.
One Ball Radio.
We recap Raw, NXT, Ring of Honor, and other shows of the week. Interview wrestlers, go back in time with this week in wrestling history, and we go, hey, whatever it happened to? Check us out on iTunes or DVMPE.com.
Tune into the Indie Power Rankings reveal every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Eastern on Blog Talk Radio, Filling the Void Radio Network. You can also subscribe to Filling the Void Radio Network on iTunes. Give a follow to the Indie Power Rankings on Twitter, at Indie Power Ranking, no GS, Instagram, at Indie Power Rankings, on Facebook, facebook.com/IndiePowerRankings. You can also go to the website where you can see the top 10 for the week, the tag team top 5, anything else independent wrestling related, IndiePowerRankingsIPR.wordpress.com.
You're listening to Grapple Talk.
Yes! Yes! Yes!
Keeping you up.
Yes! Yes! Yes!
keeping you up?
Yes! 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 Yes!
Keeping you up to date on Midwestern Independent Wrestling.
Man, what a great episode of Grapple Talk, guys.
Fantastic episode.
It's a good thing we actually got an opportunity to sit down with two of the all-time greats in this business and just really kind of pick their minds about what exactly this weekend means to them.
Yeah, it was something memorable. You know, we brought up actually earlier in the show about how we were – quote unquote falling asleep during the interviews, but you know, it was how Riley said, we were acting as sponges, you know, just trying to listen to everything these guys had to say and relating it to what we knew about the biz. And it was really special, and it was really cool to be a part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've had a lot of great episodes throughout the weeks of Grapple Talk, but I gotta say that this is going to be one that really holds close to me, just because of the fact that We thought we were just going to interview Carol about this event, which are, in its own right deserves justice. But she raised, like I said, she raised the ante and had us talk with Greg and Larry. And that's definitely an experience that I wouldn't trade for the world.
Yeah, I'm going to name all my grandchildren after numbers now, just like Larry the Axe.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's definitely fair.
It's a baby boy. What do you want to call him? Number one.
One.
Three-fourths.
Three-fourths.
I'm going to start with fractions.
You're going to start with fractions?
That's tough, man. Fractions. I can't even do fractions as it is, so I have to remember the fractions.
That'd be terrible if you were hammered.
Some of the fractions aren't really that bad.
7/30ths? Would you get that in depth?
No. Maybe stop at 16ths.
Oh, okay. That makes more sense. What you just said makes perfect sense.
You can have more grandchildren at that point, and just at that point you could just – you have 16ths, like 1/16, 2/16ths. You could – literally just have a breeding system of Jesse Von Rudin kids.
A breeding system.
Obviously,
you breed like a rabbit.
Obviously, thanks goes out to Carol, though, for you know, letting us, giving us the opportunity to do something like this. Big thanks, obviously, goes out to Larry the Axe Hennigan and Greg Gagne for coming on the show and really, you know, talking to us. You know, I'm sure they've got better things to do than talk to, you know, me. You guys.
Yeah,
but,
three slobs.
Yeah, three slobs. Still cool.
Definitely made our day.
Definitely. Yeah. It was really, really cool. It was awesome.
Yeah, so definitely we won't have a tape study this week for you guys. Just go out and enjoy professional wrestling. Either watch it live or watch something cool that you can find on YouTube.
How about this for a tape study?
What's that?
Watch Larry Henning and Greg Gagne matches.
That's fair.
Do that.
It works? All right.
That's fine.
You going to do that, AC Riley?
Yeah, I'll definitely do that.
Minnesota Hall of Fame coming up this Sunday. Check the Facebook, facebook.com/thegrappletalk for the details on all of that stuff. Because simply, guys, I'll be honest, I can't really remember all of them right now off the top of my head. I'm excited. So, again, the Facebook page, the website, the Twitter, all that stuff is a great source of information to go for all the upcoming shows and that event coming up on Sunday. It's not too far away.
No, it's not. It's free admission. You can donate if you want to. I highly suggest you do, because this is going to be something that's going to be just growing and growing in the community of Robbinsdale.
Well, that does it for this week on Grapple Talk. We have another episode coming up next week, as we always do. So thanks for joining us on this special edition of Grapple Talk. Stay classy.
What's up, guys? This is professional wrestler Rennie D.
And this is Travis Dirty Mester.
We're the hosts of The Pencil, the professional wrestling podcast, every Tuesday.
On iTunes, YouTube, Podbean, and Stitcher.
We bring you guests from the WWE, TNA, and all the major independent wrestling promotions around the world.
Follow us on Twitter at Pencil Podcast or on the World Wide Web, PencilPodcast.com.
Pro Wrestling Roundtable Slam. PWR Slam. Every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio on the Evolution Radio Network, 9 Eastern, 8 Central Standard. PWR Slam, leading the pro wrestling radio revolution with a new evolution by bringing you the stars of yesterday, the stars of today, and the stars of tomorrow, and all the other news and happenings you need to know in the world of professional wrestling. Find us on Facebook, PW Roundtable, or on Twitter, PWR Slam. See you Wednesdays.
Geeks of the Industry presents Pro Wrestling Nation, hosted by Bay Area comedian Funky Sam Medina.
Hashtag killing.
Go check out Pro Wrestling Nation right now on iTunes, Stitcher, RedDragonsRadio.com, and, of course, geeksofindustry.com.
Thank you
for tuning in to Grapple Talk.
All
right, I'll start things.
Squeaky.
Sounds like Lilo. Lilo and Stitch. Lilo. Ohana.
Jesus.
Ohana means family. You don't know what I'm talking about, Jesse?
I've never seen this movie.
Oh.
With Nick Ragnar, A.C. Riley, and Jesse Von Ruden.
Wait, I would say the traditional one.
something like that. I don't know.
What was that?
I don't know.
Beatboxing by A.C. Riley, not available in stores for good reason.
Don't let the door hit you on the way out.